Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, July 24th, 2015, and on today's podcast, we're going to discuss the nuclear negotiations between Iran and the United States. There were five other countries involved, partners of the United States in this negotiation: Russia, China, France, the United Kingdom, and Germany, but primarily it was the United States and Iran. Deal or agreement. Those are good words to describe it, since that will allow President Obama to avoid the inconvenience of complying with the Constitution's requirements for treaty approval. If the Senate actually debated this agreement and subjected it to a two-thirds vote, it might become public. People might read it, and we wouldn't want that to happen. This most transparent administration is very protective of its secret agreements. The agreement, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, will take effect 90 days after the UN Security Council endorsement, which just happened. So now the debate shifts back to Washington, back to Congress. For a congressional review, the president made an impassioned plea in a White House speech trying to rally the American people to his side. Quote, "No deal means a greater chance of war in the Middle East," he said. So Congress gets 60 days to review it, but the president is pulling out all the stops to make sure he gets his way. He will veto any legislation that prevents its implementation, he said. So there seems to be two competing views of this deal. Number one, the President Obama view, and that is that this deal is the only way to prevent war, and to walk away from it would be irresponsible. Those who support this view would probably say that the deal is a breakthrough that keeps nuclear proliferation at bay and at least begins to mend a feud with Iran that has gone on for decades. The Iranian regime sees gaining membership in the nuclear club with its own nuclear development program as a symbol of national power and national prestige. It would also provide insurance against a future American military attack. On the other side, critics argue that the deal legitimizes Iran as a threshold nuclear state power. Iran can maintain its nuclear development program. Sanctions will go away, and by early 2016, Iran will be able to buy and sell oil and other products, including weapons. The 24/7 inspection requirement comes with a two-week notice provision. And now we learn that Iran has a secret site called Parchin that will not be subject to inspection at all. The Corker-Cardin bill, known as the Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act, requires the Obama administration to provide the U.S. Congress with all documents associated with the agreement, including, quote, all annexes, appendices, codicils, side agreements, implement materials, documents, and guidance, technical or understanding, and any related agreements, whether entered into or implemented prior to the agreement or to be entered into or implemented in the future, end quote. This bill is an opportunity for the United States Senate to reassert itself and reclaim its constitutional role. The title of the bill itself, with the words nuclear agreement, indicate its true meaning. But the decision to lift the ban on expanding and importing conventional weapons was made after the Corker-Cardin bill was passed. However, the president made a great issue of the refusal of Iran to release American prisoners by saying there are no other issues beyond nuclear disarmament. So he says nuclear disarmament is the only issue, and yet conventional arms were also permitted. The ban on conventional arms was contained within a series of United Nations Security Council resolutions, which were all lifted by the nuclear agreement. Therefore, Corker-Cardin was passed due to fraud, or at least misstatement or deception, by the administration, the pretense being that it would deal only with nuclear disarmament. Those things, coupled with the president's refusal to make certain parts of the agreement available to them, should be enough for the Senate to demand this agreement be treated as a treaty requiring a two-thirds Senate vote. since the conventional arms sanctions will be lifted by this agreement, as well as economic sanctions between $100 and $150 billion will be released to Iran. This money will allow the acquisition and development of weapons, conventional and nuclear, and continued support for terrorist proxies such as Hezbollah and governments such as the Assad government in Syria. Iranian officials freely admit that they are going to continue supporting their terrorist friends. Their supreme leader says support for terrorist groups, quote, won't change at all. United States Secretary of State John Kerry said he was, quote, disturbed by this statement. But I suppose he is not disturbed enough to back away. In summary, number one, this deal was entered supposedly to avoid the use of force. But use of force is what the administration tells us the way we would prevent the use of terrorist weapons provided to terrorist groups by Iran. We would have to use force, they say. Number two, it will and already has spurred a much bigger and faster global arms race, both conventional and nuclear. Saudi Arabia, along with the Gulf Arab states, are scrambling for nuclear weapons. Number three, massive public death to America, death to Israel rallies continue unabated in Iran. They will fund a global terrorist network, perhaps already existing in America. Perhaps death to America, death to Israel actually does mean death to America. Number four, the publicly stated goal of Israel's destruction continues unabated. Number five, the obvious goal to encircle Saudi Arabia and control the Saudi oil fields continues unabated. Number six, war, especially nuclear war, is more likely as Israel and Saudi Arabia will not accept this agreement. Although the United States has pledged to teach the Iranians how to defeat the cyber warfare of Israel and other states. That's right, folks. We promised to teach the Iranians how to defend themselves against cyber attacks. Finally, I can't think of any reason why this deal is in the interest of the United States. Why would the United States confer such legitimacy on a rogue state sponsor of terrorism and enhance its ability to make war and commit terrorist acts around the world? Why would we do that? I see no good purpose, folks. At least that's the way I see it. Till next time, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.